to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you decided to join us today. I pay pretty close attention to the news. It's my job to know what's going on locally here in Detroit and Michigan, and of course, nationally. But I have to say, it's kind of rare that something about Michigan surprises me in the way that it shows up in the national press. But in the last few weeks, I've had two such surprises. Most recently, there was a story in The Atlantic, and it was titled, "Why Not Whitmer?" And in it, a staff writer at the magazine writes compellingly about our governor, Gretchen Whitmer, and the chances that she might take a shot at the presidency someday. And just a few weeks before that, there was another headline, this one from Vanity Fair, and it was titled, "The Spartan, Why Gretchen Whitmer Has What It Takes for a White House Run." Now, we're just getting started with the 2024 presidential race, and on the Democratic side, it's so far been pretty boring. That's because we have a sitting Democratic president, Joe Biden, and he's done a good enough job, I think, for most Democrats to think, hey, he should be the nominee in 2024. Even with his age and the concerns about how old he would be when he is reelected, if he is reelected, and how old he would be when he was finished serving, there hasn't been anyone who's really stepped up to say they'll challenge the president. But there is one name that seems to be coming up again and again in the presidential nomination conversation. Around the country, the press seem to love Governor Gretchen Whitmer. They say she's tough, she gets things done, and it's important that she represents Michigan, a state that sometimes is pretty blue, sometimes goes red. It's kind of a deep purple. Now, importantly, the governor says she's not running for president. She says it at every opportunity. And the last time I spoke with her was on Mackinac Island during the Mackinac Policy Conference just a few weeks ago. Here she is answering my question about her national aspirations.
The fact is, I am absolutely 100% focused on Michigan. I've got 3.5 years to continue this work, and there's a lot to do.
Yeah. She also said, right before that she wished people would stop asking her about running for president, that she's busy. She's got a lot on her mind and a lot on her agenda for the next 4 years, and that's what she's focused on. So why do people believe Whitmer still might be thinking about running for president, either now or in the future? Why do people think she would make a good president? What about her track record so far is making her so attractive for all of this attention? And let's talk about that name recognition nationally. Where's it all coming from? And what does it mean for us here in the state of Michigan? That's where we want to begin the conversation today. And of course, we want to hear from you, the listeners. What do you think about the idea of Governor Whitmer as a national candidate? You think that's a good idea for the Democrats? Is it a good idea for the country? Is it a good idea for us here in Michigan? Would it be a good thing for this state if one of our elected representatives statewide somehow was able to land in the White House? Give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you in the conversation that way. And we want to start the conversation today with the author of one of the articles about Governor Whitmer. Mark Leibovich is a staff writer at The Atlantic and recently wrote the article titled "Why Gretchen Whitmer Might be the right person for the White House run. Mike Leibovich, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good to be with you.
Yeah. So let's start here. Whitmer has said no to you as well. She said no to me. Is there any reason to believe that Governor Whitmer is thinking about, really thinking about, running for president in 2024 or at some other time? What is it that makes you feel like this is a relevant question for her right now?
Well, first of all, I mean, you know, the whole, I mean, this is a not unfamiliar dance with politicians who are kind of gaining national traction, even though they're known mostly statewide. I mean, the dance being, you know, some reporter, whether they're local or national, asks them, hey, might you run for president? Which, you know, by definition is an extremely flattering question. I mean, it's not something you ask kind of a marginal kind of backbencher politician. And they demur, they say, oh, no, I'm focused on my day job. But, you know, there's really not a lot of downside to indulging the question and even subtly encouraging it, even while denying it. I mean, I think the idea there is, I mean, she's been asked about this a million times. You know, you can't stop people from asking, but, you know, Vanity Fair, The Atlantic, I mean, we're both national publications. We came along, they knew full well, she knew full well that, this question was going to come up. And, you know, they did it anyway. And, you know, frankly, I spent a good portion of my 30 or so minutes with her asking variations on this question. And, you know, refreshingly, she kind of enjoyed it. I mean, she said no. I mean, she didn't change her answer. She didn't open any daylight. But I do think that, look, I mean, she is term limited. I mean, this is her last term. I mean, Michigan law forbids her from running again. You know, among her many assets, I mean, one, I mean, she was just reelected overwhelmingly by double digits last year. You know, Michigan has had a good couple of cycles for a state that is extremely, as you said, you know, very kind of swingy purple. And I think even if she doesn't run now, and I don't think she will, I mean, unless something changes, especially with, President Biden or his health or something like that, she'll I think, almost certainly look at it after she's done being governor of Michigan, which I guess would be 2028.
So,
well, the next election would be 2028.
2028, if she doesn't, of course, run this time. And, right. And of course, there's lots of speculation that I've been hearing that Joe Biden ultimately will not be the nominee next year, that he will step aside, maybe for health reasons, maybe for other reasons, and that there may be a wide open primary. Of course, we've got to wait to, determine whether that's so. But talk a little about what it is about Whitmer that attracts you to that question. What is it that she's doing or saying that makes her seem like a national candidate?
Yeah, I mean, I would say this. I mean, before getting into Whitmer per se, I mean, I think what is unusual about this situation is that Joe Biden is not only, you know, extremely old, but, you know, poll numbers, even among Democrats, are pretty compelling in saying that a pretty high majority of voters, you know, across the board, certainly independents, don't want him to run again. This didn't happen in 2020 with Donald Trump. It didn't happen in 2012 with Barack Obama. It's fairly unprecedented. So there's clearly an appetite among Democrats for an alternative to Biden, even if he runs again. And the fact that Robert Kennedy Jr., who, you know, he was frankly a crank, can attract up to 20% of votes in some polls, or, you know, the support in some poll, tells me that there's a definite appetite for an alternative. Whitmer is extremely attractive as a candidate. I mean, she has a very recent positive track record electorally in a swing state. She's a very compelling campaigner. I'd never met her or interviewed her before, but I found her very winning. She's also very original. I mean, it's an interesting, I mean, she's a very interesting figure. She's hyper-local, and yet she's hyper-local in a way that's very likable and that could conceivably track nationally. And I didn't, you know, I didn't make this comparison in my piece, but I'll make it now because what the heck. I remember there was a couple of days in 2008 when Sarah Palin was first announced, right? And Sarah Palin, like, absolutely invigorated that race for at least a few days until it was clear that Sarah Palin was not ready for prime time. And I hate to compare the two because it's unfair because, you know, Sarah Palin turned out to be, you know, again, not terribly, you know, qualified. And Whitmer is obviously very qualified, and her track record speaks to that. But clearly there is a great appetite for someone new. And Democrats, frankly, have not elected a new national leader since 2008. I mean, Barack Obama was a surprise. He was fresh blood. And, you know, he had to jump the line, too, because it was Hillary's turn. I mean, Gretchen Whitmer, I think, would add a very, very particular kind of energy into the Democratic Party and field that I think there's a great appetite for right now, that would also appeal to independents and swing voters who are turned off by the Trump alternative and the Trump kind of character of the Republican Party these days.
So if she were to jump into a race like this, talk about some of the other people who might also be interested. Let's say Joe Biden does step aside at some point. Who are some of the people who would be competing? I'm thinking of New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, who has run before, Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, but who would be the real competition for her?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, if Biden announced today that he wasn't running again, I think you would see many, many people jump in immediately. And it wouldn't surprise me if Whitmer gathered her advisors together and figured out a way to finesse her I will serve the rest of my term no matter what answer, because, well, things have changed. I mean, that's what happens. But no, I mean, the people you mentioned, Klobuchar, you know, people like Cory Booker, people who have run before, you know, keep coming up. But also there's a lot of fairly, you know, attractive and very compelling young governors in the Democratic field. And Governor Whitmer is one of them. Governor Newsom, Gavin Newsom of California, is someone that comes up a lot. Wes Moore of Maryland comes up. Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania. I mean, there's a number of people. So I think Democrats have a fairly deep bench, or deeper than people give the party credit for. And it's just the fact that, you know, the sort of same rehash figures, whether it be Hillary or Biden, or even, you know, when Obama was running for re-election, I mean, no one's going to run against them. So there's obviously a pretty fertile field out there waiting to sort of, you know, sort of run for the next, or ready to grow to the next level.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to continue talking with Mark Leibovich, staff writer at The Atlantic, who recently wrote a piece about Governor Whitmer, maybe thinking about national office. Want to get going with you, the listeners, as well, on the phones and on social. Give us a call. Let us know what you think about the prospect that Governor Gretchen Whitmer might be a presidential candidate someday. Two recent articles in national publications, the one we're talking with the author of in The Atlantic, as well as one in Vanity Fair, both speculating about her prospects, talking about the record she's amassed in the year she's been governor. What do you think of that record? Does it make her a likely presidential candidate? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. Listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, your host, and I'm really glad you've decided to join us. Our guest right now is Mark Leibovich. He is a staff writer for The Atlantic and recently wrote a piece titled "Why Not Whitmer?" It takes a look at Governor Gretchen Whitmer and what her national prospects might be, either next year, 2024, when we'll have a presidential election, or sometime in the future. It is one of two pieces that I've noticed recently, just in the last few weeks, that asked the same question. There was a Vanity Fair piece a few weeks back that took a look at Governor Whitmer. What do you think is one of the questions as well? Our listeners, Give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. Let us know what you think of the governor's prospects. Also, what you think of the job the governor has done. She's gotten a lot done, especially in the last 6 months, now that she's got majorities in both the Michigan House and the Michigan Senate. First time in almost 40 years that Democrats have that kind of power. She has put it to really effective use. Do you think that makes her a likely candidate on the national level? Or do you think that some of the other things she's done? Remember, her big promise is to fix the damn roads. Roads are absolutely under construction here in the state of Michigan. But do you think she delivered on that promise? Did she deliver sufficiently to catapult her to the kind of national consideration that would have her enter a presidential contest? 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag us, and we can include you in the conversation. Mark, I want to talk a little about Michigan and its positioning in a national context and whether that gives a boost to Governor Whitmer as a potential candidate. This is a state that voted for Donald Trump in 2016, voted for Barack Obama twice before that, and then voted for Joe Biden in 2020. What does the national, I guess, take on Michigan say about someone from here making a run at national office?
Well, obviously, it helps. Michigan is, you know, despite the recent successes the Democrats have had, it's going to be a key state. I mean, one of probably six or seven that probably is going to decide the next election. So it obviously is an advantage for Governor Whitmer to be from Michigan rather than, say, Vermont or California or something that will, you know, almost certainly go blue. So, I mean, it certainly helps.
And what about the things she's done here in Michigan? The agenda that she and the legislature have had since they've had this majority has been really aggressive, fast-paced. Does that play well on a national level?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, she certainly had a productive, you know, 6 months or so, and you can get a lot more done when you control, when your party controls both branches of the legislature and the executive branch, than you can when you have all kinds of resistance from the other party, as she, you know, sort of learned firsthand in her first term. But what's interesting about, you know, her accomplishment, I mean, first of all, the things that she's known for, you know, certainly the kidnapping thing around 2020 mm-hmm. was extremely unfortunate. You know, it was scary, but it also, for better or for worse, I mean, certainly not something anyone wants to go through, but it certainly made her well known. But also, just, you know, she's been a real spokesperson on abortion. She's actually, you know, taken some pretty proactive steps on gun safety, and also, look, I mean, fix the damn roads. I mean, you mentioned that earlier. And I just, having been out there recently, I mean, you see there is construction all over the place, which is kind of a hassle, but it's also, you know, it's not that hard to spin that into progress, and it is progress. I think not only is fix the damn roads a hyper-local issue, which affects everyone in Michigan, you know, the vast majority of the country wants good roads. I mean, infrastructure as an abstract is a very, very important thing and a very popular thing for most people. So it's certainly an issue that has helped her in Michigan and that is popular in Michigan, but it's also one that can scale nationally.
Yeah, yeah. In the piece, you talk about her pivoting from specific issues to the broader theme of personal freedom, particularly relating to abortion access. And this kind of, you know, I feel like when local politicians or statewide politicians want to jump to the national level, there is this kind of, vocabulary, I guess, they have to develop mm-hmm. about the difference between governing a state and governing a nation. It seems like you feel like she's developing that or maybe has already right. developed that in Lansing.
No, I think that's a good point. I mean, I think one thing you have seen with ambitious national politicians, whether it's Ron DeSantis on the Republican side, Gavin Newsom on the Democratic side, even, you know, Barack Obama, I mean, Pete Buttigieg when he ran the last time, is an idea, is a skill for sort of pivoting from as you said, you know, a singular issue to a larger freedom agenda. And, you know, I think around abortion and guns in particular, I mean, I think the messaging from Democrats has been, you know, less than perfect. And then she's trying to sort of change that. You know, Republicans have sort of owned freedom, for better or worse, as an issue. There's like, you know, oh, we're going to have freedom to bear arms. And, you know, Governor Whitmer has said, no, we're going to have freedom to actually send your kids to school without worrying about someone coming in with an AR-15 and shooting up the place. Or, you know, reproductive freedom. I mean, you know, maybe leading with the freedom rather than the more abstract, you know, vocabulary around reproductive rights. So, I mean, she's been very deft at that, and it's pretty clear watching her speak publicly and certainly speaking to her one-on-one that that's what she has become very adept at doing.
Yeah. I want to talk just a little bit about the pandemic and the reaction that she had to the pandemic, mm-hmm. and then the reaction that lots of people in the state had to her reaction. There was a thought for a while that that could have cost her a re-election bid, that people were sufficiently upset with the extent of lockdowns here, the length of the lockdowns. We had schools closed for a time. How does something like that play in a national context? It didn't end up being decisive in the 2022 election, but would it be something she'd have to answer for in 2024?
I think obviously she would if she were running in a Republican primary, but I think, you know, as you said, it certainly didn't hurt her in 2022, and it didn't hurt her really if you sort of look statewide at the polls. I mean, I think, speaking generally around the pandemic, I think every chief executive probably of both parties would like to have a bunch of decisions back. You know, maybe you didn't go far enough. Maybe you went too far. I think Governor Whitmer clearly, you know, underwent some criticism for maybe, you know, pushing limits so far. But you have to remember, I mean, that was a really scary time. We weren't dealing with a lot of information. We, you know, vaccines weren't, you know, hadn't been invented yet. Mm-hmm. There was a lot going on. And you know, I think one thing we've seen from 2022 is that the memories and sort of like the fallout from those decisions didn't really have traction going beyond, you know, the end of the real crisis period in the pandemic.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. You can also go to social media, to Twitter, hashtag us, and we can include you in the conversation. Let's start today with Dan in Detroit. Dan, what's on your mind?
Good morning.
Hey.
I just want to say that while I'm excited about the thought of maybe a Michigan governor getting this kind of run, I'm an avid Democrat, anything but Trump, period, but I'm concerned of three major things with the governor. One is her lack of actual supervision and consequence to the unemployment fraud that happened during COVID payouts. Mm-hmm. Next, the auto insurance premium refunds just before the election, and now we're facing an auto insurance deficit. And lastly, where's that transparency that she talked about that has been lacking in Lansing?
Yeah,
I think 3 points of vulnerability are huge and would be amplified if a national magnifying glass got turned on our governor.
Hmm. So Dan, when you think about her and those issues, and then think of other possible candidates, you know, people who've been in the Senate or governors from other places, do you think she has more weaknesses than they do? Or, I mean, everybody's got issues that that voters could take issue with.
I can't say that she has more. I just know, because I live here, that those three are pretty significant. Now, whether the national press would be able to distinguish that as being more than any other person,
yeah,
I don't have that take.
Yeah. Dan, I really appreciate the call and the insights. Mark Leibovich, these are, of course, very local issues that the governor has had to answer for in one form or another. Would they play at the national level, and would she face challenges about any of them?
Yeah, probably. I mean, the thing, you know, when you go national, local issues become bigger than they were the day before, you know, the day before you ran for president. I mean, I think the larger issue, though, is it's not so much, I mean, I think almost any Democrat would vote for someone other than Donald Trump. And that's probably true of the majority of independents, which is what makes Republicans, if they nominate Trump again, so vulnerable. I mean, the question is, you know, why is Biden so vulnerable, even quietly among Democrats? I mean, I guarantee you, if Gretchen Whitmer got into the race tomorrow and she got on a plane and went to South Carolina, Nevada, you know, I guess Michigan's one of the early states now, so that's an advantage for her. I mean, there are a lot of, you know, if she starts running, I guarantee you, one, she will get a ton of national press. She will get a lot of blowback from the White House, from, you know, the Democratic National Committee. You know, Biden's got a lot of loyalists. But after that initial sort of blowback, which really is kind of a contained kind of Washington wise guy, conventional wisdom kind of thing, I mean, she would energize a lot of people. I guarantee you, you know, there'd be a massive press attention around her. She'd probably get really big crowds. And from what I saw, she's a very good campaigner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this wouldn't be RFK Jr. I mean, again, RFK Jr. is not going to win the Democratic nomination. He's not going to be, you know, the next President Kennedy. I would love to see someone, and I've called for this before, you know, and I think a lot of people have called for this before, a serious candidate, and Gretchen Whitmer certainly is that, to sort of see how they would do, to sort of like give some flesh and bones to what an alternative to Joe Biden would look like among a party, among people in a party that clearly want one.
Yeah. So I want to talk just briefly about the other side of the political spectrum here and the Republican primary, which is also shaping up. How does Whitmer's candidacy, I guess, fit into that context as well? You've got Ron DeSantis making a real effort. You've got Donald Trump, of course, out front still. There's going to be other candidates as well. Tim Scott from South Carolina said that he's running. Give us a sense of how you assess that side of the field, and then how Whitmer might fare against any of them if she were to run and win the nomination.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting calculus. I mean, I think DeSantis has had a terrible start to his campaign. I think Trump, certainly sitting here now, is the overwhelming favorite to be nominated for the third consecutive time by the Republican Party, despite many, many misgivings and many, many indications that he's not going to be the strongest candidate, you know, against President Biden or whoever the Republicans or whoever the Democrats put up. I will say this, though. I think that Trump is so scary to so many people, particularly among, you know, certainly Democrats and many independents, that it has made Democrats very risk averse. You know, there were riskier picks in 2020 who excited audiences a lot more than Joe Biden did, but Joe Biden was seen as a safe choice in 2020. And he kind of built himself as like a bridge candidate. He said, okay, I'm going to turn things over to the next generation of leaders, whether it's, you know, Gretchen Whitmer, who was actually behind him when he was like making that statement. In Michigan, I think he said, and you know, I think people kind of assumed that it was one and done for Biden, and he was going to beat Trump because he felt best qualified to do that. He proved correct there, you know, sort of right the ship a little bit, and then sort of turn things over to the future on the assumption that Trump would be going away. You know, here we have Trump again, and I think, you know, Biden decides that he wants to do this again at the age of 82, which is what he'd be, you know, when he on the next election day. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, we're going to postpone the future for another term because that's sort of what the conventional wisdom calls for. I think it would be a real breath of fresh air to go in another direction.
And when we talk about that Republican side of things, what will those decisions for voters turn on next year? Will they turn on the question of Donald Trump and his record and his popularity? I mean, he has dominated Republican politics now for almost 8 years. Mm-hmm. Or are some of these other folks more interesting? Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Vivek Ramaswamy. There's a lot of newcomers and interesting entrants on that side.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, I mean, it's on the Republican side, it's, first of all, it's just simple math. I mean, you have like 8, 9, 10 people running, and 40 or so percent of them are just like deeply committed to Donald Trump no matter what. You know, you're going to get that 40% for Trump, and then the rest are going to split the rest. So, you know, the math works very much in his favor. I mean, you don't see him terribly concerned about Tim Scott and, you know, Nikki Haley jumping into the race or Chris Christie or whoever. You know, he welcomes this. So, but no, I think the problem for Republicans, if Trump is the nominee again, is that a lot of voters will actually turn, make their decisions negatively about who to vote for based on Donald Trump. And even if Joe Biden isn't that popular, which he hasn't been, if you look at polls and approval ratings and so forth, you know, the people who don't like him and who don't approve of him probably could stomach him more easily than they could Donald Trump, who I think is seen as a catastrophic result among people who don't even like Joe Biden, which, you know, would either keep them home or, you know, have more people holding their nose to support Biden than they would Trump. And frankly, you know, it's not the most inspiring way to look at an election, but it sort of, it is the pragmatic way. And I think it's something that a lot of, you know, people around Biden are banking on.
Yeah. Okay, Mark Leibovich, staff writer at The Atlantic. It was really great to have you here to talk about our governor, Gretchen Whitmer. I assume you'll probably be back to see us again sometime soon for
the political cycle. I always look for an excuse to come to Michigan.
Yeah.
I went to school there. I have great fun.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Thanks for being here.
Great, thanks for having me.
When we come back, we are going to stay here in Michigan, but we're going to talk with someone who has a different take on why people don't stay in the state. If you'll remember the Mackinac Policy Conference, Governor Gretchen Whitmer was really focused on the idea of keeping more people here, attracting more people here. We're going to talk with someone who says there's one thing that we're doing wrong that's really a disincentive to staying here in Michigan. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.